Up, folks, how are you doing? So this is me, you know who I am, right? So, and I'm waiting for my friend, my buddy Rudy Machiello, so we can start this episode of Chá Pedagógico. And I'm sorry if I keep looking the other way because my cat is here, Elena, to join us. I have my tea ready here, so let's wait for Rudy to connect. There he is.
Finally,
Okay. So was that you or me, Ben? I
I
was
have no
asking
idea.
everyone.
I think it was me because I had to close every app I have open, even in the background
Okay.
of my
All
device
right.
here. So I think it was me. So how's it going, bro?
Well, I'm happy you were able to join me. I'm not going to do shop pedagogical on my own, man. Too much responsibility.
No,
But yeah,
I'm
somebody said it
here.
was oscillating, so it might be my connection as well.
Well, I think it's everybody's connection because here in Brazil, we definitely don't have a very nice internet connection. So,
That is true,
yeah.
man.
By the way, how are you
So
doing?
what's up? Well, same old, just doing too much, not too much time, right? You know the drill, right?
I
But I'm happy to be
absolutely
here,
know.
man.
Yeah. I mean, as I said, November wouldn't be November without an episode of Chá Pedagógico, right?
And this one is actually pretty cool because it kind of came to us after we watched the same thing together, right?
Yeah.
So that was a coincidence, yeah.
We were watching a well, I think I can say a congress. I think it was an online congress. I don't know how to call these events now because when you say a congress, automatically some people think, oh, it's a congress, but it's not live. It was online, but anyway, and it was on Klo, and then automatically I texted you. I said, dude, there's an episode right in front of us, and
By the way, this is how all our conversations start. When we have an idea, it's like, dude, that's it. And then I know there's something coming.
Yeah, that's true. It's always like that. Like, dude, I have this. And,
Actually,
whatever.
I don't know if I told you that, but sometimes I want to send you a message. And then I actually go into the search box on WhatsApp, and then I just type "dude" because I know I'm gonna find one of our last messages, and then that's it.
It's always like this. It's always like this. But seriously, this one's gonna be about Clil. And I think the whole idea behind talking Clil, as it's the theme, the episode of the day, is not actually to tell you. I mean, of course, we're going to discuss Clil very briefly in a couple of minutes. But I think the idea is to analyze the entire approach of Clil under the lenses actually of neuroscience and applied linguistics, because I think nowadays everybody already knows what CLIL stands for, not only what it stands for, but also what we should do if we want to have this approach in our schools or wherever we teach. So this is the whole thing behind this episode. So again, we're going to have like a very brief talk about what CLIL is and the whole idea behind that, so we have everybody on board, and then we're going to try to analyze it. And please, guys, I know that everybody knows the drill, but if you do have some questions, interact with us. There is the chat box
Please
here.
do.
You can send comments, you can send questions, you can say whatever you want. Just please don't curse, because this is going to be on YouTube. It's going to be on EDC Rocks IGTV, and it's also going to be on
Exactly.
Spotify later on.
We can curse when we're doing the behind the scenes like we did. That's okay, but not now. This is the official one. So,
Yes, and we'll try not to curse as well.
Exactly. But like you said, I think the purpose here today is not really to go over, in detail, the origins and how Clil works and the concepts and everything. But it's kind of like, okay, so we have this approach that has been used for some decades now, and it's something that started in Canada and then kind of transitioned to Europe, and then so and then it be became something quite popular worldwide, right? And then we've been implementing this, but then What can neuroscience tell us about that? And what can linguistics, applied linguistics, tell us about that, right? I mean, is it really something that we should focus on, especially now with the new reality with, you know, bilingual education and bilingual programs? Or maybe, you know, there's just too much fuss, and then, I don't know, maybe it doesn't work that well. Well, we'll just tell you what we think based on our, you know, fields, right? And exactly. What we've been reading. So, you know,
yes.
We're not going to tell you. Yeah.
Not at all. Not at all. We're not here for that.
Yeah.
The whole thing behind CLIL, of course, you guys already know that, is to use language as a means of instruction. So basically, it's going to be a history class, and the history teacher is going to use English to teach the history content, and the geography teacher is going to do the same, the math, physics, whatever subject we're talking about here. And we do have some successful cases all over the world. So as you said, Canada, Japan, especially in universities, many universities have been using CLIL. Spain has a very successful case as well. The UK, but the thing is, all these places have their particularities, and especially in the UK, and we also have our own particularity here in Brazil.
And
what we do have here in Brazil is, I think that what we're going to struggle the most as teachers is how to motivate our students to actually use the language.
Yes.
This is going to be crucial if we talk about CLIL. Because, of course, and probably you guys have felt this like this before and this before, like, oh, I have a group of students and my students don't want to talk or they don't feel engaged. Every opportunity they have, they resort to Portuguese, which is our native language, or whatever their native languages are. I don't know what to do to motivate them. And this is going to be maybe a motivational factor for our students. Like, okay, so now I have to use this language because we know that here in Brazil, we don't have this motivation. Our students cannot go to a restaurant and use this language. They cannot go to a movie theater and use the language to buy tickets. They can't go to a bar if we have adult learners. They can't go to a bar and use the language. So this is something that we do have here in Brazil. This motivational factor. This may be one of the factors that's going to contribute to engage our students in the language. But at the same time, we do have other struggles. Even though this would be like the DNA of CLIL. The DNA of CLIL is to actually motivate our students based on, okay, so we don't have the opportunity to use this language outside our school.
Yeah.
So, okay, so we're going to bring this motivational factor to our school because now you're going to have history, geography, math, PE classes, music, whatever kind of classes they have in the school.
And you said it, man. Yeah, so English becomes a means to an end, right? So we need to be able to use this tool to learn something that is going to be relevant for us later on in life when, you know, we're going to college or whatever. And then I think that's that motivational aspect is very important when we're talking about CLIL. And for those who have no idea what CLIL is, you know, maybe we jumped the gun here. So, you know, CLIL is content and language integrated learning, right? Mm-hmm. And it, like Rudy said, we use English as a medium of instruction to teach a subject, right? So basically that's like that's like the simple direct description of CLIL, right? So I here in Brazil, in a school that adopts CLIL, I will be teaching history in English. I will be using English to teach history, right? And then if you go back and you think about how CLIL kind of, you know, became a thing, then we understand why it's important to discuss CLIL, because actually there was a need in specific locations that people had, maybe they were part of two different communities with two different languages. So they came together. So like in Quebec, Canada, where you have people who speak French and people who speak English, and then they had to, you know what, since they're going to live together, it's probably a good idea for us to add that to the curriculum. And how can we do it in a, let's say, you know, effective way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, why don't we teach? Why don't we teach in an immersive way in which students are not only learning subjects because they have to learn subjects at school, but then they're doing that through the language that they have to learn so that they can integrate in the community. And then with the European Union, that became even more, you know, predominant, right? So you had people moving all over from country to country. The European Commission, you know, set a number of policies to make that happen, right?
Yeah.
And that's and that's exactly why it is something worth discussing, you know, because there is a need. We need people to be able to use that language, language X, additional language. But we also need them to learn a content because that's part of their curriculum. So why don't we put them together, you know? Because then English serves the purpose that English, I mean, the language, we can use language for many things, but language can and should be a tool for us to accomplish things, right?
Exactly. And just to be clear here, when we say that English is going to be the tool to use, the tool to be used to teach history, math, whatever, we're not saying that we English teachers or we language teachers, we are not going to, we're going to stop teaching the language and we're going to start teaching history. No. That's not the thing here, okay? That's not the thing here. This is going to be one of the points of this discussion today, but this has to be very clear. We should not be afraid like, oh, so now from now on, I'm going to have to be a history teacher in English. No. We'll still be English teachers. We're still going to be language teachers. But what we are going to keep the linguistic content that we're going to be responsible for using and exposing our students to is going to be a little bit different. The way we're going to select the linguistic content is going to be a bit different. It's going to be more based. It should already be like this, but it's going to be even more based on our students' needs, based on the subjects that they're going to have. But this is going to be some of the topics that we're going to discuss today. And that's the tool. You know, you said the tool. So this is a tool. We're going to use the language as a tool. So, for example, if you're going to hang a picture on the wall. If you're going to hang a wall, you have to be tall.
Yeah.
Or a superhero.
Definitely,
But you're going to hang a picture on the wall. You're going to need a nail. And what tool are you going to use in order to insert the nail onto the wall? Well, maybe you can try, as we were discussing, a screwdriver. I don't think it's going to be very effective, even though you can. You're going to reach the goal at a certain point, but I don't think it's going to be very effective. You can use
a shoe.
I don't know, a shoe. You can use something heavy, but I don't. They're going to serve a purpose, but they're not going to be very effective as a hammer. Because the hammer is the right tool for that activity. So Khalil does pretty much the same thing. We as language teachers, we're going to do the same thing. We're going to, okay, so what's the correct linguistic tool for my students to use in history class, in math class, in geography class? And then we're going to open a box. Oh, this is the right tool. Okay, kids or students, this is the right linguistic tool. And then they're going to be able to use this in the right way, in a very effective way.
That's it. And I remember we were discussing this when we were planning this episode. It just came to me, what if students are in a history lesson and they have to learn about Napoleon, right?
Mm-hmm.
So in history lessons, we're definitely going to use past tenses, right? So we need to use past tenses to talk about what happened or even what had happened so we can actually contrast two different times in the past, right? So, like Rudy said, you open the toolbox and you get simple past and you get past perfect. And then you get all of those different verb tenses and you equip your students with those tools so that they can accomplish the task. And the task is to talk about Napoleon and, you know, his trajectory in Europe, you know, how he was defeated, how he was sent to prison, you know, everything. So, because they have the tool now, they can accomplish the task. They can actually achieve the goal of the lesson. So that's how Clue works, basically, right?
Exactly correct. Just a comment here. Dude, we look like one of those guys from Los Hermanos. There's a band in Brazil. There's a band in Brazil called Los Hermanos. And they were famous because they were very, you know, bearded. And we're very bearded today.
Exactly.
So I was thinking, I looked at the picture here, and I was thinking,
you know, I learned how to play Ana Julia when I was a teenager because it was a huge success, right? Ana Julia, by the way, is the only song I can remember that they did.
They had like one more song that I mean.
Yeah. It's like one hit band, you know, like one hit band. Like
it's because they are very alternative. They are very, you know. This is a band composed by, I think, 4 or 5 guys. They are all bearded and they're very alternative. And like, we're not going to sign with big music companies, you know, labels.
Exactly.
And we're going to try to be independent, underground, and all these things. They are very peculiar in this sense. But they're very bearded. And I was taking a look
at this. So you see?
You know, my beard is gigantic. My hair is gigantic as well. I'm doing like this all the time because the hair keeps falling on my eyes. Here.
It's no shave November, right? Are you following the trend or that's a hashtag? Yeah.
Yeah, I've been preparing for this since March.
Okay. So yes, you really been following it. Yeah.
Yes. A couple of minutes ago, I talked about that. I said actually that. We're not going to stop teaching the language. And one thing, another important thing here is to understand two differences. What is to teach about the language and what is to teach with the language.
Exactly.
Right? We have two different situations here. When we teach, I'm going to explore a little bit about teaching the language. Okay. We teach about the language, basically, we're going to be like language teachers here. We're going to teach them past tense because they're going to use this tool for history class or math. Because I remember several years ago, I was developing a project at EAC, it's Escola Americana de Campinas, or American School of Campinas here in Campinas, São Paulo. And I remember the math teacher told me that, and this was a long time ago, before CLIL was even here in Brazil, of course, before CLIL was a trend. And he told me, Rudy, my issue with my students is that when they have some sort of activities, they read the activity and sometimes they don't know what they're supposed to do because of language, even though that is an American school here that we have. And it's a real American school that we have here. And that's pretty much it. You know, we're going to teach the language. We're still going to, you know, if we're using PPP, for example, or the 3 P's. Who are two men?
Two dumb arses. What?
Why? What are you two men? Names?
I have no idea, man. Hello, well, two men. I
hello,
David.
Bro.
Hello.
How's it going, man?
Okay. Why? We said no cursing, right?
Yeah, dude, come on. Why? Why the tough love? just because we were talking about Los Hermanos? Come on. The whole thing is, we're still going to teach the language. We're still going to present the model, drill it, and provide some performances. You know, they're going to still need to perform some things.
Exactly.
We're still going to do this, but we're going to do this based on the language that they'll use in different areas. It's not going to be based on the syllabus, for example, or the textbook. Sometimes I know that many schools still have the same procedure when they have to decide the entire language content throughout the year. They open the textbook and they say, okay, so let's just follow the index here and, you know, do whatever we are supposed to do. It's not going to be like this anymore. Now we have, and it's very important that the English teachers work together with the content teachers so that they understand, they are aligned, like, oh, I'm going to teach this, so I think this is going to be very necessary, all right, so then me as an English teacher, I'm going to teach this because I think this is going to be very useful for your department. So this is teaching about the language.
Exactly. And then you said teaching with the language or through the language, then the language becomes a means to an end, like we said before. Mm-hmm. So I need to understand, it's sort of like a code for me to crack something, for me to accomplish whatever it is that the book or the teacher has asked me to do. And I like to compare that with coding, right? So nowadays, coding is a language, right? When we program stuff with coding, it's like a language. And then, so I was reading a book by Mitchell Resnick on coding and Lego and, you know, creative learning and stuff like that. And kids, they're not so much interested in coding, on its own right, in itself, you know, but they're interested in the things they can do with that language. So they can create different narratives and games and, you know, whatever they want. Yep. And then for them to be able to do that, they have to understand how the language works. Mm-hmm. So let's say, and then, so there was a kid, he talks about this kid who wanted to create a game, but he wanted the participants, the players, to actually have a score that changed as they got points, right? Mm-hmm. For this boy to be able to do that, he needs to understand how to insert a variable in the coding process, you know, programming, so that every time the player, the avatar, does whatever it has to do, it gets the points, right? And then, so it kind of works like that with Clil, because you have to use the language to do, a math equation. You have to solve the math equation, or you have to debate the science, or you have to talk about a geography concept or whatever. And then it could become more relevant than going to a language institute, you know? Mm-hmm. Because then when you are studying in a language center, you have a book that has a scope and sequence. And then sometimes it's not very clear what the task is for you to accomplish. I mean, there is a functional situation that I have to, you know, order something in a restaurant. Mm-hmm. But sometimes you're learning, so you're reading about crops, so you're reading about a plantation, because the vocabulary is going to be used for something. But then I'm not interested in crops, you know, like there is no purpose for me to learn about that. So you cannot see the task very clearly. Whereas when I'm at school, and then I have to be in that lesson because I have to learn science, because I have a task, because I have to, you know, then it becomes kind of more, you know, evident to the person learning. And then so I have to learn the tool so that I can do the task. Otherwise, I cannot accomplish the task, right?
Exactly. It's a motivational factor for our students, as we were saying in the very beginning of this episode. And probably if you guys have been following Chá Pedagógico for the last almost 2 years, next year is going to be the second year of Chá Pedagógico.
We need to get a present. You know, we're gonna send each other a present.
Two-year anniversary. Where's Anna from Argentina? She offered us some beer a couple of episodes ago.
Oh, Anna, yeah, that's true, right?
If you're watching us right now, or if you're watching us on YouTube, or later on IGTV, or if you are listening to us on Spotify later on,
we'll take the drinks.
Yes. So next year, the second anniversary of Chá Pedagógico, you can, you know, maybe 100 drinks beer, so you can send them quilmes, and for me, you can send me some alfajores.
Ah, right. That's I think I will actually get some alfajores as well. You know, I'll buy beer here.
So, if you guys have been following us, you know that I'm super in favor, and I totally agree with the whole concept of usage-based learning, which is one of the fields of study that I have in linguistics. And what's this usage-based learning about? It's not only about a person using the language and then the society shaping it. It's also any type of use. any type of views. Of course, the moment that we have a person involved in this conversation or in this interaction using the language, of course, then the world is going to provide some feedback, some live feedback, and then we're going to shape our language or repertoire. We're going to increase, etc., expand, etc., etc. So that's the whole thing that we have with Clil. Clil respects that because why?
Yeah.
A kid or students are going to learn the language. They're going to have some opportunities to also use the language. At least I hope, I sincerely hope that you dedicate a very precious amount of your time, of your teaching time, for your students to actually use the language. This is really important. Yeah. You know, and they are also going to have other opportunities to use the same language in different content classes. Math, physics, biology, chemistry, etc. So they are going to basically have the opportunity to use the language, and then the content teacher is, or the field teacher is going to be responsible for shaping this. Like, oh, okay, so maybe you shouldn't understand this question this way based on this language or this language, you know, based on this word or based on this collocation. Maybe you should understand the entire question. You know, give him a different viewpoint, a different viewpoint of the same prism, you know. So this is all about usage-based learning, you know. And our students are going to use the language, be exposed to the language. They're going to have some questions. And, of course, remember a couple of minutes ago I said it's important for teachers to work together because then the content teacher is going to be responsible for checking this out and talking to the English teacher like, English teacher, come here. Okay, so they have some doubts about this structure, these words, these collocations, etc. So they had basically questions about this, about these items, linguistic items. And then we as language teachers, we're going to be responsible for following it up. And that's the beauty of Clil.
And you know what, man? You said something very important because not every teacher feels equipped to work with Clil because they're focusing on the content part. So I'm a language teacher. I teach language, but suddenly I have to teach content. But we have to remember that Clil has actually four central pillars and only one of them is content, right? But you also have communication, you have culture, and you have cognition. And I think that as language teachers, we can handle those three very well. Content, we can as well, but you know, if it's too specific to a subject, a given subject that they have to teach, then it could be challenging. But again, you have to work with a teacher who knows that. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that at oftentimes here in Brazil and probably all over the world, whenever you're teaching with Clil, you're actually going, you know, you're covering some of the topics that the kids have already seen in a way. So they have probably learned those things, and maybe 1 year before, actually. So the previous years, they were introduced to those things, and now you're kind of like revisiting those things in a different language. Mm-hmm. So that kind of gives so there are two things that are great about that, because you reduce the amount of cognitive overload. So they're not learning something brand new in a different language, which would be very much, you know, probably very complicated and would stress them up very much.
Yeah.
And also you are doing something that I like very much that is spaced repetition. So you're retrieving stuff that has been taught before, and that's going to help them consolidate that in their brains, right?
Yes.
And then again, so what we need to do, because we have to be realistic, if we're working with Clil in Brazil, how many teachers are you going to find? How many history teachers who have actually studied history, they have the degrees, they have everything, have also studied language teaching? We're not going to find this professional very easily. You know, it's going to be very hard to find. Not at all. So then again, how can you make Clil work? You need to team up. You have to grab the English teacher and grab the history teacher and then go over the concepts, you know, study together, put them together so that they can, like, create a task force, because otherwise it's going to be really hard for you to do that. That is easy in Europe. You know, if you're teaching Clil in Switzerland, Of course, you know, teachers who are history, geography, whatever teachers, they already speak English. So that's easier. But here in Brazil, it doesn't work like that.
And you know what? It happens. I had the opportunity to go to Switzerland some years ago to present my PhD proposal at a congress there. And that's what they do, because in Switzerland, they have German, Italian, and French.
Yep.
So they do teach these three languages in school. They do have that.
Exactly.
No matter the area they use CLIL, because they use CLIL for that. No matter the areas that they are, because you have in Switzerland, they have the French
cantons,
area.
Right? The little I don't know how you call it. I think they are cantons or something
it's
like cantons. That. Yeah. Cantons, yeah.
Cantons, yes.
Exactly.
So it's the French area, because it's close to France.
Yeah.
And then you have the German area, which is the biggest part of the country, because it comes from the north up until basically half of Switzerland. And then the down south, which is close to Italy, you have the Italian area of the country. And they do that.
Exactly.
They teach German, but the French area, they do teach all these languages. In the Italian area, they also do the same. In the German area, all the same. So they do that in Switzerland, and it works. Of course, they do have this, they have the beauty of using the language outside school that we don't have here. Of course, it's a completely different scenario, completely different situation, but that's how it works.
Most definitely,
and what you said is really important, and it's key. It's fundamental for CLIL. Teachers have to team up, because we're not going to find teachers who have a background in language teaching, and vice versa. We're not going to find language teachers who have a background of, you know, we're not supposed to have this background in teaching chemistry. For instance, if I had to teach chemistry, I'd starve to death. Nobody would hire me, because I'm not good at chemistry at all.
I wasn't that great, but I think I would like to, you know, try the challenge. Like,
no, impossible.
But you're right,
it would
man.
Be
yeah.
impossible. You're Maybe right. physics, because my first college actually was engineering, but maybe physics, if I remember some stuff about physics and math. Maybe math.
Yeah.
I actually don't remember, because it's been a long, long time that I don't revisit this crazy and dark area. But that's the thing.
I would be okay with science, social studies, history, you know, maybe geography. And maths, maybe. Yeah. But you know, dude, you said... You know, this is actually something important if you think about the neuroscience, because if kids already know how to do the stuff they do in the subject class, like, you know, calculate something in the math class or whatever, then for them to learn how to do that in a different language, in an additional language, that doesn't require that much effort now because of transference, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we create a schema of, you know, like a neuronal network in the brain for, I don't know, adding or subtracting or doing anything that is, you know, necessary in the maths class, right?
Yeah.
And then we already know, we already have the cognitive ability of, you know, or the cognitive process in our brains. And now we just have to add or to attach a different label to that, which is the specific language that we use for that in English, right? The specific language, the vocabulary that comes with that. And that's easier. So if you learn how to count, and I think you mentioned that a couple of times, right? Do I have to learn how to count again in every language? Well, you have to learn what the labels are. The label for one is in an additional language. But counting, the ability of counting, which is something hard, it's socially constructed, right? That babies and, you know, actually kids are going to learn that. That's set, you know. Now I just have to remember how I call those numbers in different languages, right? And then so I don't have to relearn how to count.
It's the same thing with colors. And let me just make a brief comment here, because Edson Suarez, he commented here, teaching CLIL method is something that we need to adapt in order to be able to teach students. It is indeed a bit, because he corrected himself a little bit later on, a bit beyond our grasps. Edson,
yeah.
As that's what we were talking about. We're not going to stop teaching the language. We're still going to be language teachers. The only thing is that we're going to work together. We're going to team up with content teachers in order to understand what the students' needs are. And then we're going to select the linguistic aspect of that content, and then we're going to bring into our classroom, whether it's an online classroom or a physical, a face-to-face classroom, okay? But thank you so much. But you're right. I'm not saying it's easy, okay? We're not saying it's easy. It is hard. It is pretty hard, right?
Yeah.
But going back to what you were saying, Andre, yes, we create schemas, and it's the same when kids learn colors. I just wrote an article 48 hours ago, I finished an article. You can go to Machiello.
I saw that,
You saw that firsthand, because the moment I finished it, I said, dude, take a look at what I just created.
Exactly.
It's on our website,
Machiello. Stephen Pinker is not happy with what you wrote there.
Yeah, he's never happy with me. I think one day if we're face-to-face, he's going to shoot me in the face, you know? It's the same with colors. If we have a subject about colors. What are colors? Our students already know what red is. All we have to do is to label, and that's basically what we do. And that's what we call it, I language or internal language. Okay?
Exactly.
That again, please, I'm not saying that our thoughts have language. I'm not saying that we have to think in English, we have to think in Portuguese or in whatever language. No, that's not what I'm saying. When we call it internal language, it means that when we're exposed to a specific language, whether it's L1 or L2, we're going to understand the rules, the conventions, we're going to understand how to use a specific collocation, etc. And then, as you said, Andrea, we start developing a network. And this network is what we call internal language, because we understand the nuances of the language. In here, guys on Spotify, in here I'm touching my head, okay? Because you cannot see us on Spotify.
Yes.
This is something that we have to discuss, by the way. People who actually have some visual impairments, and they really like to follow us. We have to, but this is for 2021. We develop this network in our minds, in our heads, and Clio is going to help this the development of this network, because our students are going to be exposed to language variations. So they are going to be exposed to a specific linguistic feature in which they're not very used to, and they'll try to grasp the meaning of that, or how to understand that, how to convey that, and they'll make some transfers, whether it's positive or negative. It's not the case
but they're going
to have the chance for transfers here, you know, and that's also the beauty of CLIL.
Exactly. And, you know, I was talking about bilingual education and, you know, childhood and everything. And then I watched the very cool webinar by, this Cambridge linguist. She's a neuro-cognitive linguist, or I'm not sure what she does exactly, but her name is Dr. Mirjana Bolcic, I think. And then she says that one of the things that we can get from, you know, the evidence that comes, you know, from research involving bilinguals and monolinguals is that bilinguals, they have what they call metalinguistic knowledge, which is they understand that there can be more labels to the same concept much better than monolinguals, because monolinguals, you know, this is a cup, and that I only speak English. So my concept becomes this, the words that refers to that concept.
Yeah.
And then bilinguals, they can actually detach those things, because like Rudy said, so you think, we're not using a specific language, we're thinking, right? So you think about the concept of cup, and that activates a specific network in your brain. And then using your frontal lobe, your prefrontal cortex, you have to suppress everything. So let's say I'm thinking of the color red, right? So when I think of that concept, I'm not really using any particular language, or maybe I'm using all the languages. But what my brain does is it stops the other labels from the other languages that I know from coming out. So if I'm talking to you in English, I'm going to use the English label. But then the same area I speak German to, and I know that red in German is rot, right? Mm-hmm. I also know that in Italian is rosso, and I know that in and then in Spanish is rojo, and then so you understand those things are being suppressed because I'm talking to you in English, right? And that's actually very, very good for our cognitive abilities, so that we're kind of like exercising our brain. And that's why it makes a lot of sense for you to join content and language together in a classroom, because then again, the language becomes a tool and you're exercising, you're doing things that are actually going to give you a benefit, an advantage long-term, right? You for can sure. protect your brain. You can actually create cognitive reserve, fight off, you know, like neurodegenerative diseases and things like that.
Yes, absolutely correct. Yeah. And this is all because we're exposing our students to this variation of language that we have. Because the language that's going to be used in history, as you said, maybe it's going to be the past because they're going to learn maybe about Napoleon, or they're going to read about ancient Greece. They're going to be exposed to, you know, whatever kind of subject or content, historical content we have. And then the language for biology maybe is going to be different. I'm not an expert in biology here. I'm terrible. I suck at biology, actually.
I loved biology, Ed.
Oh, man, it doesn't make any sense to me, man. It doesn't make any sense to me. Seriously.
Yeah.
I no, seriously, my sister is an expert in biology. She rocks in biology. She's perfect. But I don't understand a thing about that. And she was younger, so there's a 4-year difference between me and my sister. I'm older than my sister. So when I was in high school learning biology, I couldn't actually come to her and ask her for help because she was younger.
She knew already. Yeah.
No, she didn't know.
She didn't know. Okay.
Because she's younger.
Because you said she's so good that I thought she was actually able to help you in high school.
No, because she took biology at Unicamp. She studied biology at Unicamp. And now she's right. She is awesome. She rocks.
Yeah.
You know, every time I have to ask her, actually my family, you know, bothers her all the time, you know, with crazy questions about, they think that my sister, you know, is also a medical doctor. Because, but you're a biologist, you must understand about this. I'm a biologist, you know. She has a master's degree, but she's just a biologist. But the language is different. The language is going to be completely different. And this variation is also going to be responsible for the enhancement of our students' repertoire. And this is great. This is going to be awesome. And as you were saying, they're going to have the opportunity to actually create more labels for the same thing. Because maybe they are going to find, thinking about grammar here, okay, grammatical structures. Maybe they're going to see that a grammatical structure that is used for history can also be used for biology, meaning different things. So they're going to have two labels for the same structure, trying to broaden a little bit, because when we consider isolated words, it's one thing. It's easier for us to understand, like you were saying, mug. And then maybe you can have different labels for the same word. But when we talk about structures, that's even greater, you know, because they are going to find this like, oh, wait a minute. So I can use past for this situation and I can use a simple past for that other situation as well. Whoa, that's awesome. And maybe our students are not going to get that on the spot. Maybe they're going to find this. And again, the biology teacher is going to be responsible for checking this out, talking to the language teacher like, hey, look, my students struggled with this kind of activity because I think they couldn't understand what the activity was asking them, or, you know, the whole task. And then the English teacher is going to be like, oh, but this is past tense. Oh, maybe they couldn't realize that it's also possible to mean this and that. Of course, this is just a given example, random example that I'm giving you guys here. But this happens, you know, and this happens because of this language variation that CLIL offers us.
Yes, and again, I'm pretty sure we mentioned this. We both watched this movie, the 13th Warrior with Antonio Banderas. So he's this Arab guy who it's a cool movie, actually, right? And then he has to go to somewhere in Scandinavia with a bunch of Vikings to find a monster, right? Somebody who's killing a bunch of people in this village. And then there is a scene in which he's there, and then, you know, Vikings, they're all getting drunk and saying terrible things, as, you know, good Vikings would do. And then he starts, like, acquiring the language. So it's a natural process and everything, right? So because he's exposed to the language, and then he starts noticing some patterns. And, of course, you know, they kind of sped up the time very much. Like, the guy became fluent in, like, what, a week with the Vikings or whatever?
One scene. He wakes up and he understands everything.
But that actually, if you think about it, and if we become immersed in an environment where a language is being used, we are going to start picking up some things, right? Because there's a lot of shared intention, body language. So one of the questions that I get the most, like, how can you teach a subject in English here in Brazil as an additional language if our students don't really know English well? But, you know, if there are aspects of language acquisition and language learning that if you put somebody in an environment, they're going to start picking up a couple of things. They're going to notice some things. The teacher will work with the chunks, and then they will understand that, oh, if I can use this chunk here, let me try to use in this other situation. It works. Great. Let me try to use in this other. It doesn't work now. So there's another chunk for this situation here. So it's kind of like trying to use the tools that you have in the toolbox, right? So Clio definitely works. I think Clio is something that kind of, you know, speeds up a little bit in terms of language learning. If you think about that here in Brazil, most of the time, especially, you know, a decade ago, before this whole, you know, fuzz of bilingual education, for you to learn English, you either had to go to a language institute outside of your classroom, of your regular school. So it had to be something done in parallel. Or you had to kind of wait, you know, for most people, you had to go through the whole educational system, go to college, do whatever. And then as an adult, you start studying English. And that could be more complicated because you have a bunch of other things to do in life, right? So then language learning doesn't become a priority. But then if you join those things together, when you are a little kid or a teenager, you're buying yourself time, you know, because you are learning through exposure. So you are immersed. You are sharing intention with your peers and your teacher. There's body language. And the teacher is there. The teacher has or should have a linguistic background to teach you the chunks, the grammar, the vocabulary, the calps. Remember calps when we talk about the specific language, academic language for the subject. So that makes perfect sense, right? I think Clio is actually a good thing, you know?
Yes, and that's pretty much what we have when we're learning Portuguese. We're trying to replicate the scenario that we have when we're learning or when we're developing our native language, but now with a second language, with a language that's not spoken in an entire country. In this case here in Brazil is English.
Yes.
You know, that's pretty much the same. And the other beauty of Clio is also, well, the whole point of Clio is actually to get the message across. And then some teachers might ask us, but wait a minute, what about corrections? What about accuracy, etc.? And what you mentioned is really important because one of the sub skills that can be explored in Clio is inference is something that can be explored, and it will be explored with Clio because our students are going to make some inferences, and this is going to be amazing because we can anticipate this as language teachers as we're preparing our lessons, and hopefully I think you guys prepare your lessons. If you don't, it's never too late, but start doing that. You know,
if you don't, the boogeyman is going after you.
The boogeyman, and I'm not talking about the general boogeyman. I'm talking about Keanu Reeves. You know, that boogeyman from John Wick.
That boogey, that's perfect.
John Wick is coming.
You don't want to mess with John Wick, you know.
Exactly. Yes. He's like the Chuck Norris of 21st century. But yeah. It's all about the idealization. Because the students are going to idealize something as they are attending our language classes, and they're going to idealize that. This is going to be reinforced when they have the content class. So we're teaching simple past, and then they are going to idealize simple past. It's going to be consolidated in history class. When they're learning history, and we can anticipate that. We can anticipate this idealization. When we're preparing our lessons, we're going to be like, oh, wait a minute. So my students are going to think that this simple past is only for this, 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 and that. And then, again, I know we said that 1 billion times this episode, and I know that we only have 5 more minutes, but talk to the content teachers and before you prepare your lesson, of course, because then you anticipate that, and then maybe you can prepare a lesson if you know that the teacher is going to talk about ancient Greece. Maybe you can prepare a lesson contextualized enough to with the material, with an audio visual material, with a text or whatever, with a role play that's going to be useful for the history class. And then you anticipate this idealization. You can think beforehand, like, okay, so then my students are going to probably do this. They are going to anticipate to idealize that. And when they go to the content class, to history class with ancient Greece, then they're going to be even more prepared.
That's it. And man, you mentioned something that I think it kind of rings a bell, like an alarm, because I remember as a teacher working with PPP, you know, like a communicative approach and everything, we often don't really share at the beginning of the lesson the goal of the lesson, because we kind of getting to the first P, the presentation stage that you have to engage the students and elicit whatever. So you're going to work with past simple. So you're going to come into the classroom and going to say, and maybe you never used this language before, but you're going to say, you know, yesterday I had an amazing meal. And then you use the chunk and the language is there. You presented the content and then you write on the board. And then the students notice that you use that, right? And then great, we're learning past, the past tense. But then it's not so clear why they have to learn past tense. It's not really obvious. We understand that, okay, the past tense is very important, but why do we have to learn it now? When you're dealing with CLIL, again, you normally start with the objective of the lesson. So you kind of have the broad, like the general picture, the big picture of the lesson. And then that makes more sense to students. Oh, I have to learn this chunk, this grammar, so that I can talk about this thing here, because this thing is part of the subject that I'm learning, and I'm going to use the subject for that, right? Mm-hmm. And then again, I think that actually facilitates the whole process. Because when we're working, like I used to, and like I think many of you do until today, or have done, we don't really talk about the goal of the lesson. And sometimes the goal is really not related to the student's reality. So we try to present, we practice, and then maybe back in the mind of the students, they're going like, okay, why am I practicing this again? When I'm going to use this? Like, what is the purpose of this, right?
Yes. Yeah. I know that the whole conversation today is about CLIL, but this is something that I tell my students, the participants of the courses that we have at Machiello Consultoria. Why not sharing the goals with your students? Share the goals. PPP doesn't state anything like you're not supposed to share the goals. No, you are. You can do that. Like, okay, guys, so at the end of today's class, we're going to do this. We're going to learn this because we're going to do that. Or maybe if you don't want to do this in the very beginning of your class, you can do that at the very end of it. Like, okay, guys, so what have you learned today? oh, we learned this.
Exactly.
And why did we learn that? Because the last P is performance or production. And then they're going to, oh, we learned that to do this this kind of task. And they're going to be, oh, yes, that's why you learned. Because, you know, normally the task is going to be aligned with a real life situation. It's supposed to be like this, at least if you're using PPP, you know. Why not? You know, we can do this. Yep. And I know that we have only 2 minutes, I guess.
We do, yeah. Well, but like you said, man, so the idea of CLIL here is that it's a very useful approach that we can implement in schools so that we can not only take advantage of learning a subject, but we can insert language learning as well, because they go together well. It makes sense, you know, learning a language becomes learning the tool to understand the subject, and then you save time. So instead of waiting for the students to learn all the subjects and then go to a language class somewhere, you can do it inside a school. You can do it inside their classes. And it works. I mean, we have a lot of evidence that it works. It has been working very well in England, in Europe, in Canada. So why shouldn't it work here? As long as, and you said it, put the language teacher with the content teacher so that they can work together, right?
Yes, that's crucial. That's really, really important.
All right. Do we have time, man?
I don't know. You tell me. Say,
we have like 1 minute and a half, I guess.
1 minute and a half. All right. So, guys, let me thank first, because then I can be fast. Thank you so much for joining us in this one more episode. We're so sorry that it took us a long time. All, you know, the last one was basically in the mid-October. We're at the end of November, you know.
Yeah.
But thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget that this one is also going to be on YouTube later on. Machiello Consultoria.
Yes.
Find us on YouTube. Find us on Spotify. It's also going to be in the format of podcast. And also on your IGTV, right, Andre?
Exactly. So, you know, if you missed it, you can still watch it today or maybe tomorrow. And thank you very much for joining us. I hope this was useful. And dude, we do look like Los Hermanos, you know?
We're not going to sing in a Julia.
No. Has it been translated to English?
Hopefully not.
Yeah, well, it was their biggest hit, so who knows, right?
Who knows? Maybe they did that.
Dude, I have no idea how much time we have left, but, you know, maybe we have more because it took you a while. But I think we can say bye. And wrap up.
Yeah, I think we do before we start. Oh, now Sandra's here. Sandra, you watch this episode from the very beginning and tell Anna that we want
we're collecting
and beer from Argentina next year. You'll understand
when
you watch it.
Alfajores and dulce de leche. Yes.
You'll understand if you watch it from the very beginning. Go to IGTV as soon
as we're maybe
here,
some wine. You know, Argentinian wine is pretty good.
Actually, whatever you send us, we're going to be fine with this, okay? You're going
That's
to understand
awesome.
When you're watching. But thank you guys so much for joining us again.
Yeah.
Again, don't forget to follow us, Machiello, at Machiello Consultoria here on Instagram, at EDC Rocks Instagram here as well, Spotify, YouTube. Don't forget that I just posted a fantastic article. Of course, I'm not the best person to say it was fantastic, but I think it was a fantastic article on machiellocosutoria.com.br. Follow EDC Rocks, and they also repost very amazing articles on edcrocks.com.br.
Yeah, so I just told her it could be beer for me. See you guys. Thank you very much. Yes.
Thank you, Andre.